Welcome to the podcast of Paley Presbyterian Church. The following sermon is by Pastor Becca Bruner.
So my own children have trained me well for the run for the money that these kids give us every week, which is great. I do have three kids. Those of you who don't know, Eleanor, who's 8, Benjamin, who's 4, and Meg, who's almost 2. And Benjamin right now is you might know him. Some of you do. He's the real special one in our house right now. If you've seen him around, likely you've seen him just running up and down the hallways with cookies in each hand and his mouth. That's how he does church. And he's a 4-year-old boy, which is to say he is very strong-willed in his life right now. That's Benjamin on his first day of preschool this last year. He's very cute. But Benjamin's the kid who wants what he wants. He knows what he wants, and he knows what he doesn't want. And in particular, what Benjamin does not want is for anyone else to tell him what to do. And so it's fun for me and Dave, because lately it's probably just been in the last year that Ben's had a list of favorite phrases. Most often said things by Ben in our house include phrases such as, no, just no, you're not the boss, you don't get to tell me what to do, you're not the rules. That's my favorite one lately, you're not the rules. You're right, I'm not, but that's okay. I am the boss of me. And lately, he has the audacity to straight up tell us, I can do whatever I want. He's really special. He's a lot of fun. Anyone who ever wants to just come spend a free day, couple days, week, whatever you want, really, it's available to come spend a year with Ben till he hits 30. No, Ben is actually a very affectionate, kind, funny, just great kid. We love him. I think we will keep him. One, because we love him, and also two, because the reality is, if we were to trade him in, you know, just trade him in, we want a different model. Reality is, we would get the exact same thing. I know it, one, because I've reached out to some boy moms in moments of trial. I know we'd get the same thing because 4-year-old boys are 4-year-old boys, but we'd get the same thing because people are people. And all of us, that desire that Ben has, all of us have, his desire for autonomy and self-direction and freedom, that's not unique to him. Every human being who has ever lived has wanted to be free. Problem is, we're not very good at it. Human beings, we're not very good at being free. We don't really understand what freedom means. Just, I want you to think through a few scenarios with me. Imagine you're driving and a squad car pulls you over for going too fast, but you get in a conversation with the officer and you say to him, you know, I just don't feel authentic going 65 miles an hour. You know, when I drive, I try to be guided by my deep inner voice, and my deep inner voice tells me you can go 90. You should go 90. So, officer, don't try to impose your rules on me. When I am driving, I have to be free. We call those people, we have one word for those people, we call them speeders or crazy. Or sometimes Presbyterian pastors, but no, we won't talk about that. Or imagine an IRS agent shows up knocking at your door and says, the government's noticed you haven't paid any taxes for the last 10 years. And indignant, you respond, I understand that paying taxes may work for other people, but not for me. It would feel kind of hypocritical. If I were to give some of my money to the government, it would not reflect my deepest passions and values. So don't impose your rules on my money. I have to be free. Well, we have two words for those people. We call them tax evaders. Or finally, imagine a man and a woman. They're on a date. They're enjoying a beautiful, nice, romantic meal. And he leans in close and says, you know, being faithful to just one woman, it'd be too confining. I've grown to be in touch with my core inner self, and my core inner self, well, when that self sees a woman who is attractive, I have to stare. I have to chase, and I have to see if I can get her to respond. We have a name for these people, too. We're not going to go there. You can come up with that one later. The human soul does cry out to be free. And the common perception is that any rules, any regulations, any limitations, they stand in the way of our freedom. And Christianity and the Bible, well, we've gotten a pretty bad rap out there for being particularly restrictive when it comes to freedom. Author Philip Yancey wrote a book called What's So Amazing About Grace, and that book is particularly in response to some pain that he experienced in his childhood church and the limitations and legalism that he experienced there. He writes, "I came out of a Southern fundamentalist culture that frowned upon co-ed swimming, wearing shorts, jewelry, makeup, dancing, bowling, and reading the Sunday newspaper. Alcohol was a sin of a different order with the sulfurous stench of hellfire about it. No short skirts for women, no long hair for men, no polka dots on dresses for women because they might draw attention to suggestive body parts, no kissing, no holding hands, no rock music, no facial hair. It all calls to mind the dog who thought his name was No because that was the only word he ever heard from his master." Well, today as we finish up week 4 of Long Story Short, we do find ourselves in a section of the Bible that has some rules, some of God's law. Exodus 19 and 20 is where we find the Ten Commandments. And I want to say again, just parenthetically, as we're still in the midst, just week 4 of this 13-week overview of the Bible, if you haven't been able to join in yet, it's never too late. You can grab one of those study guides and a Bible out from the table in the narthex and jump in for week 5 this coming week. If you've missed a sermon, all of the audio is available on our website that you can listen in. We want anybody and everybody to join in reading as much of the Bible as you possibly can with us. You'll still get a lot out of it even now. And to catch us up from where we were last week we talked about the Exodus. Moses and the people of Israel being freed from slavery. They saw God's mighty power at work through the plagues, through the Passover, and that defining moment for the people of Israel, the parting of the Red Sea. And so now we get to Exodus 19, and it tells us 3 months have passed since that day. Exodus 19, starting at verse 1, says, "On the third new moon, after the Israelites had gone out of the land of Egypt, on that very day they came to the wilderness of Sinai. They had journeyed from Rephidim and entered the wilderness of Sinai and camped in the wilderness. Israel camped there in front of the mountain." We'll pause there for a second. So it's just been 3 months since the people of Israel left Egypt. 3 months since they were freed from slavery. But you got to remember, they have been slaves for hundreds of years, hundreds. For all the people who have been now freed from slavery, being a slave is all they've ever known. So now they're free, but they have no idea what that means. See, the people had been taken out of Egypt, but God knew very well it was going to take some time, it was going to take some work to get Egypt out of them. They needed to learn what it meant to be truly free. And so that is what God is seeking to teach them to do, to be free. And that's what God wants to teach us as well. For though we think we are free, reality is none of us are as free as we would like to think. Just take this one example. In our country, in our society, culture we live in, you and I are generally free to drink as much alcohol as we want. We are restricted only by, you know, drinking and driving laws and laws around public drunkenness. But besides that, privacy of your own home, according to the laws of the land, we're free to get loaded every night in the privacy of your own home if you want, right? Are you with me? That you're free to do that. Eventually, however, your drinking may begin to cause some problems for you. Damages your health. It embarrasses your kids. It hurts your marriage. It threatens your job. You get to a point where you want to quit, but you can't. You discover that you are not free to enjoy sobriety. You're free to drink as much as you want, but you're not free to not drink. See where I'm going with this? Whether it's in relation to alcohol or something else, all of us have this brokenness inside of us that keeps us from being as free as we want to be. You want to stop drinking, but you can't. You want to live with a happy, cheerful, optimistic attitude, but you can't. You don't. You want to quit yelling at your kids, but you fail. You want to be the kind of person who manages your anger really, really well, but you aren't. You'd like to think that you've become really unselfish, but you haven't. You and I, we're just not all that free. And friends, God's eternal intention for his children is that we would be, that we would be free. But God's path to that freedom, well, it looks a little different than what you and I might think, and certainly what our culture dictates. The great irony about the real and true soul freedom that we crave, that real and true soul freedom that we long for, that we were made for, that kind of freedom can only be found when you surrender, when you give up. See, if you want your soul to be free, you have to acknowledge that there is a spiritual order that God designed for you. You are not the center of the universe. You are not the master of your fate. You are not the captain of your own ship. There is a God, and that God is not you. And it's not me either. True freedom comes when you embrace God's overall design for the world and you find your place in it. And that overall design is revealed in part in these Ten Commandments. Now, the giving of these commandments is recorded in Exodus 20. As Moses met with God on Mount Sinai, we're told that the people were standing there at the base of that mountain. And actually, to this day in Judaism, people will stand for the reading of these Ten Commandments. And so I'd actually like to invite for us to do that today, anyone and everyone who is able. I'm going to invite you to stand as we read from God's law together. Then God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above or that is on earth beneath, and that is in the waters underneath the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of parents to the third and fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns. For in the 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, but rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Honor your father and your mother, so that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or male or female slave, or ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. This is God's holy word. You may be seated. So we only have a few more minutes. We don't have time to get into every detail of every law given here in the Ten Commandments. So I want to just think about two things as we think about them as a whole. Two questions. First, what is the purpose of these Ten Commandments? What are they given to us for? And then second, who is the one who gives these commandments? What is that one like? Who is he? So first, what is the purpose of the Ten Commandments? What are they giving to us for? And to answer that question of what they are and what they do, we first have to think about what they are not, what they don't do. And the first thing we need to recognize is that the Ten Commandments are not given to us as guidelines. These are not optional guidelines. I don't know if any of you have seen the movie, The First, the original came out maybe in the 2000s, Pirates of the Caribbean movie, that Johnny Depp movie that came out a few years ago. There's a scene in that movie where one of the pirates captures the protagonist, a young woman, and they kidnap her, and they're trying to get information out of her. And she doesn't want to tell, but they tell her, they say, listen, we've got this code, the pirate code. And if you tell us this secret, we can't kill you. That's in the code. So she figures that's a good bargain to strike, and so figures she's protected, so she tells them this secret that she's carrying. And as soon as she does, the pirate turns to another one and says, great, now kill her. Obviously, she objects to this fate, and so she says, wait, you just told me about the code, the pirate code. You're not following your own code. And he looks back at her, he says, yeah, actually, they're more like guidelines. It's the way a lot of us think about the Ten Commandments. You know, they're great. They're great guidelines. They help us make sense out of life. They're the standards of the day, but, you know, sometimes the day changes, and if the day changes, maybe the guidelines should change too. Ten Commandments are not guidelines. They don't change. They're also not multiple choice. You know, we don't get to go through the list and say, today I feel like number 5, but number 8, I'm not feeling so good about that one. We don't get to pick and choose which ones we follow. They're not guidelines, not loosey-goosey, kind of get to choose what we want to do, but they're also on the other end of the spectrum. They are not a gateway. The Ten Commandments are not a gateway that we get to walk through to enter more deeply into relationship with God. Like if there was somebody out there, you know, just parent, you know, hypothetically, if there's somebody out there who could perfectly, always, every day, follow every single one of the Ten Commandments, if such a person existed, they would not be closer to, more loved by God than any of the rest of us. Ten Commandments don't get you more loved by God. They're not a gate or guideline. They're not a gateway. So what are they? What's their purpose? Well, a great way to think about them, I think, is as a guardrail. As we were talking about with the kids this morning. So what a guardrail does is it protects and it directs. Guardrail protects. This last summer, my family got to take a vacation out to Glacier National Park. And if you've been there, know the highlight of Glacier National Park is this thing called the Going to the Sun Road, this multiple mile long road that has literally been carved out of the side of a mountain. It's beautiful and it's terrifying. Because you drive on it, and there are points as you're driving that I was looking out the passenger side window, and all I saw was just sheer cliff down to the valley below. So when, not the whole time, there weren't guardrails there. When there were, I was very grateful that there was something that stood between me and my death at that valley below. So God's law is given to protect us. As we were talking to the kids, in the same way that we tell them, don't touch the hot stove, don't run out into traffic, we're telling that because we love them, we're protecting them. In that same way, the Ten Commandments are there to protect us from entering into behaviors and habits and relationships that will inevitably cause us and others harm. So a guardrail protects, but it also directs. It keeps you on the road. It keeps you moving in the direction that you're supposed to go. So the Ten Commandments are given by God to us to direct us, to direct us to become a certain kind of person, a person who doesn't lie, a person who doesn't steal, a person who doesn't covet, a person who is content. Ten Commandments direct us to become a certain kind of person, but more importantly, the Ten Commandments direct us to God. They show us God's values. They reveal to us what's important to God. They show us what God is like. So we all do this. If you want to know what somebody is like, you kind of start to figure out what they value. And the Ten Commandments show us what God values. So you remember at this point in the story, people of Israel, they have very, very limited understanding of who God is. They don't know him real well at this point. Certainly they know that God is powerful. I mean, they've seen this God come in and in a matter of months be able to encourage and push Pharaoh toward letting the people go. They saw these plagues. They saw the Passover. They saw the parting of the Red Sea. That's what they know about this God right now. They know he's powerful. But beyond that, in the days to come, they're going to be asking more questions about what this God is really like. Who is he? What does he value? Can we trust him? And so the Ten Commandments are there to show the Israelites that God is not just powerful, but this God is good. That this God is so good that what he wants most of all is to create a community, a people who live out of an ethic of love. Love for God and love for one another. See, Jesus, we know this now, Jesus, he summed up all of the Ten Commandments. He narrowed it down to two. You know, I guess he knows that our memory isn't as good as our kids anymore, right? Remembering 10 is kind of hard. We can do two. Jesus said, the greatest commandment is to love God and to love your neighbor. That sums up all of the law. And literally it does. The first four Ten Commandments, what they have to do with is loving God. And those last six direct us how we are to love one another. It can't be communicated any more clearly than this, that God is a God of love. So the purpose of the Ten Commandments is to protect us and to direct us, to protect us from harm and direct us to our powerful, good God of absolute, incredible, unending love. But if we really want to understand these commandments, if we really want to get them at our heart level, the most important question we have to ask is, who gave them to us? Who is the God behind these Ten Commandments? And God tells the people in the very beginning as he gives them this law, Exodus 20, verse 2. He says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. In certain Bible translations, I don't know if yours does this, but in certain Bibles you read, you'll see the Lord written in caps. And ever you see it written in those capital letters that way, that's a signal to you that that is the holy name of God, Yahweh. We learned about that last week. It's that name that God gave of himself at the burning bush when he first called Moses. And we learned that it means I am. I am the God who was, the God who is, who will be with you in every moment, in every circumstance. I am the Lord. I am the Lord, your God. In Hebrew, that your there is singular, not plural. Yes, he is the Lord, our God, to all people at all times, absolutely. But in this moment, God is making it so clear that he is talking to each and every one of them, each and every one of us individually, personally. I am the Lord, your God. And God goes on to say, I brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. So the people of Israel are discovering this God is not a God who's too holy to get involved. He's not a God who stays away from their struggle. Rather, he is a God who plunges down into the depths of their pain. He is a God who knows and cares about the suffering of his people in bondage. He is the God who came down to free them from slavery. This is our God. He's not distant. He's not aloof. He's not this authoritarian deity. He is the God who comes all the way down to us in Jesus Christ to free us from slavery, to sin, and to death. He doesn't start out by saying, look, here's a list of all the things you need to do to get my love. follow my list, you'll get my love and we'll be good. But trespass any one of them, you might be out. No, no, no. He says, I am the Lord, your God, who loves you, who has bought you with a price, the God who sets you free. For the human soul cries out to be free. And it is only when we surrender to God and to his ways that we do experience that true and lasting freedom. We're going to stumble along the way. As we continue reading, you'll see the people of Israel did over and over and over again. We're not perfect, but we do serve a perfect Savior who is patient and always ready to forgive and to set us back on that path to freedom once more. I'll close with this. The great evangelist Billy Graham was married to a woman named Ruth. They married in 1943 and remained married until the day she died in 2007. And Ruth was a remarkable woman herself, but when she died, she chose to have engraved on her headstone nothing that had anything to do with any of her worldly accomplishments. Had to do with this fact that as long as we're alive, God's going to be working on us, and then we will be free. See, she'd been driving one day along a highway through a construction site that had miles of detours and caution signs and machines and equipment, and when she finally came to the end of it, that final sign in that construction site read, "End of construction. Thank you for your patience." And so that's what's written on her headstone. End of construction. Thank you for your patience. Construction today. Freedom for eternity.